Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Cindy Burnett.
And my name is Dr. Matthew Werwood.
This is the Fueling Creativity Podcast.
On this show, we'll be talking about creativity topics and how they apply to the field of education.
We'll be speaking with scholars, educators, and resident experts about their work, challenges they face, and digging deeper into new and varying perspectives of creativity.
All with the goal to help fuel a more rich and informed discussion that provides teachers and parents with knowledge they can use at home or in the classroom.
So let's begin. So Matt, season two is done. It's been a great journey, hasn't it?
It has, Cindy, and I continue to get so much from this podcast. It's awesome. I love the guests and I love all of the takeaways that we get from the show.
So Matt, today we're going to debrief our experience with season two, especially in the second half of our episodes. So we had Dr. Wendy Ross, we had Ajelle Wade, we had Dr. Heather Lyon, we had Jeffrey Davis, and we had Dr. Jonathan Plucker. So I'd love to hear one of your standouts. What has resonated with you and stuck with you since our interviews with them?
Well, all of them were absolute standouts, and of course, standouts for different reasons. But, you know, I think in terms of the topics or themes that I've gone away and really thought about, the first one is our episode with Wendy Ross about serendipity, because there was a part of the episode where I asked the question, well, we started to speak about students getting stuck in the classroom. And for the most part, we were, I think, if I recall correctly, talking about getting stuck and how there's things and experiences that exist in our environment, and we need to be open to those things and experiences to help us kind of like get unstuck. One of the things that I found fascinated with that conversation is the role of the educator during that event when you're seeing a student in your classroom environment getting stuck. And, you know, I do a lot of kind of project-based learning environments in my practice. And quite often they center around some type of ill-defined problem that's presented to the students, usually at the beginning of the semester. So they have that kind of incubation period, lots of time to generate questions and explore problems before kind of like picking, you know, a project to pursue. But, you know, even after they've picked a project, there's always that point in the semester where I typically observe a student or group of students getting stuck. And since speaking with Ron Baghetto in season one, and we had a conversation about this idea of sometimes in learning, you want to feel uncomfortable. So I've kind of been a little bit more standoffish when I notice my students getting stuck, because I kind of want them to kind of maybe embrace the uncomfort and kind of navigate through the challenges by themselves. But then I also recognize that for some students, they get stuck and they really struggle to get out of that experience. And so I've really been thinking about over the last few weeks, what is the role of the educator? And I can't really sit here and say I've kind of come up with a universal response to that question. I think it probably might just come down to, you know, some instincts and experience in the classroom and a case-by-case basis. But I do think that there is a role of the educator when a student gets stuck. And I do think that there's a connection between how the students overcome that challenge and the creativity that they obviously produce as the semester goes on. So it's been more of a theme that I'm thinking about and become very curious about, as opposed to a practice or strategy that I've began to incorporate.
I think it's really interesting that you're bringing up the discomfort piece, because one of my key learnings comes around the discomfort. And I think it's something in the creative process that we don't talk enough about, because we talk about sort of the end product and we talk about, you know, maybe we reach challenges and what happens when you fail, but the actual discomfort that comes from the learning process and the creative process is not something that we talk about a lot in the literature. And it's interesting that you pointed out in terms of your students, because I had my own professional experience where, as Wendy was talking about, you're sort of in this flow state, you're moving forward, and then all of a sudden there is a serendipitous event that occurs that takes you off your projected path. And I remember feeling that discomfort of, oh, this is not what I want to be happening right now. And it just brought me back to that conversation with Wendy and sort of embracing the discomfort. And the interesting thing was, when the friends I had around me that were trying to help me problem solve it, I said, you know what? I just need some time to live in this discomfort. And then I can shift. And I remember her talking about shifting from looking at this opportunity, the serendipitous opportunity, as something we can use for our benefit or something that we can just use, you know, that we just sort of fall apart with. And I said, I need to live with this discomfort. And then once I've dealt with it, I want to shift it into an opportunity and how I might use what's just happened as something that's going to help me grow as a professional human being. And that really, it's like it came at the perfect time for me.
To piggyback onto that, but now going to my second takeaway of the second part of season two was our conversation with Jeffrey Davis around wonder. Mm. And so what you're sharing is something that I kind of thought about, but more in connection with what Jeffrey had shared around wonder, particularly, you know, his story, reading his book, you know, that idea that he's heading down a road that's got a destination that he kind of feels like he knows what that destination is. And then there's kind of like this disruption, there's this disturbance in our environment. And, you know, how Jeffrey was talking about it was there's opportunity to just hit the pause button and kind of like engage in this moment of wonder. And, you know, as we wonder how we're going to get through this experience, as we wonder the outcomes that we might produce, the directions that we might pursue as a consequence of this disruption that we now have to address, right? How might that facilitate our you know, individual creativity and innovation as an individual? And so everything that you just shared is something that I've been thinking a lot about, but I got it in connection with wonder and this idea of how we can track wonder to be better at responding to the disruptions that we have in our lives.
I love it, Matt. And just to build on that, I would say also getting curious about what's happened and asking questions instead of, you know, being upset about it, but to actually get curious about it.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, we probably haven't mentioned the pandemic as much as we should have in season two. We spoke a lot about the pandemic in season one, and perhaps we've unfortunately just become accustomed to this way of life now. But going back to that pandemic, you know, all of that disruption that we experienced as parents, as educators, also as students, there were probably some of this that kind of just pushed through and plowed through and kind of made some adaptions to our practice in order to kind of like get through to the end of the semester in this kind of new learning environment. But then to your point, there would have been other people that began to ask questions, that began to get curious about the technology in a way that perhaps went a little bit above and beyond how other people may have been curious about the technology. And I just wonder if that also played into some of the new outcomes that were produced as a consequence of, you know, delivering instruction at a distance, because some educators would have asked questions and would have begun to get curious about new buttons, new functions, new approaches that led to completely different types of learning experiences that perhaps they're still implementing even in today's environment when they've returned back in-person teaching.
So this leads me to my second piece, which is around Heather Lyon's conversation around engagement. Now, you know, when I go into schools and I talk about creativity, and they don't really understand the purpose of why they would need creativity in education. And I talk about how creativity and using creative thinking brings about methods in which teachers can engage their students in meaningful ways. But when we talked with Heather, and she talked about a lot of teachers, the fact that a lot of teachers actually think engagement is students sitting in rows with their hands folded and they're listening as engagement. And I don't see that as engagement at all. So when she said that, my mind was sort of blown and I was like, wow, well, that makes sense. So if there are teachers out there listening and you think that engagement are students sitting in rows, I challenge you to think about it in a more meaningful way to get students actually to the point of what Heather calls interested and even perhaps absorbed in the learning content.
You know, when I did my dissertation study, I posed a question to a group of teachers for them to define this concept of teacher creativity. And one of the themes that emerged with that question is that overwhelmingly the teachers in this group saw teacher creativity as being about increasing student engagement in the curriculum. And certainly anecdotally, when I've gone out and had other discussions with educators or teams of educators that are kind of doing really cool and fun things with technology, they typically are also making the connection with engagement, right? So, you know, making movies, making video games, it's perceived as a really great way to boost and increase engagement. And I've been thinking a lot recently about, even though we're getting students to do really fun things and they're doing those fun things and producing, let's take movies or animations or websites, for example, one of the things I realized is that just because what they're creating is really cool and we could say it's not a paper, I was thinking, it still might not necessarily be the engagement that Heather was challenging us to think about, which is this engagement of absorption. It still actually might be a form of compliance, which means that they're still going ahead and making the website. They're going ahead and producing the animation, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they are fully engaged. And so that really got me to reflect on my project-based learning environment, even though I see the students delivering these kind of like, you know, awesome ideas and projects at the end of the semester. I kind of went back and said to myself, okay, I'm engaging them in this experience. And this experience kind of says it's a cool way to teach. And I certainly feel that it's a very, an effective way of teaching. It certainly develops and forces them to use a whole bunch of soft skills that we value in the industry. But I was still thinking about how many of them are engaging in the experience as a result of being engaged from a compliant perspective as a point of doing absorption. And I think the only way for me to really know that is to kind of almost follow them, you know, the following semester or the semester afterwards to say, are they actually applying some of the things that we learned in my class in their future projects, right? Because if they didn't, then I'm not sure I've reached that level of absorption. So I did go away and think a lot about that. And again, of course, reflecting it on myself. But you're right, Heather shared a wealth of information about that concept of engagement, which, as I said, seems to be very connected to teacher creativity.
And what would you consider your third key insight from this season?
I've spent a lot of time thinking about this idea of excellence gaps, you know, and it's probably obvious to some, but I never really kind of like, you know, there was a point where in our episode with Jonathan Blacker, he spoke about this idea of, in essence, the goal of education is to get everyone to this kind of like standard. The standard is perhaps somewhat low and we're kind of satisfied and content with students getting to the minimum standard. And I went away and I did spend some time thinking about, wow, like that is kind of a sad state of affairs. Like, shouldn't we be challenging and pursuing excellence in our students? And I don't know how you do that or do that within the system, but at the very minimum, what I think we should explore in our practice is how can we challenge students to value pursuit of excellence? So when they're given an opportunity, you know, a choice, right, that they identify the choice where they think that they can excel and pursue excellence for themselves, not for the grades, not for our standards, for themselves. And so that's going to be, I think, my takeaway as we go into the new year is challenging myself to pursue excellence and then also challenging my students to identify and make an effort to pursue excellence in themselves.
I love it, Matt. And I think that's a great goal for 2022. So my third insight comes from Jonathan Plucker as well. And what was interesting about listening to his conversation again was the fact that he talked a lot about labeling gifted students. And we asked him, like, how can you test for giftedness? And one of the things that really amazed me that came out of his mouth, especially as the president of the National Association for Gifted and Talented, is that you don't need to test kids to find out if they're gifted. Just observe their behaviors. And if you see them excelling in some capacity, you know, go with it. And you don't need to question whether or not if a student is on a path of excellence or is absorbed in their learning, you don't need to stop and say, let's test them for giftedness. Like, just go with it and continue to build on their desire to learn and their motivation to learn. And I loved that because if you see your child excelling in some capacity, how can you give them opportunities to build on that? And how can you give them learning experiences to help them dig deeper into that so that they can become absorbed in those things that they loved or love?
Yeah, no, and I'm going to build on that. The other piece is to monitor as parents our own bias in this, right? So I had an emotional response, a kind of knee-jerk reaction to my 4-year-old who turned around and said, he's looking really good at his drawing and artwork. I mean, it's incredible, and he regularly get compliments on it. And the other thing is, a four-year-old, he keeps saying to me, when are we going back to the Giggling Pig, which is this amazing kind of a art club that exists in my hometown, and I think it's recently become a franchise. And he's saying, you know, when are we going back there? I want to go back there. And I haven't actually prioritized him going back there, because my bias is, well, no, I want to get you swimming and we've got some sports things to be doing. And so it doesn't seem to be a priority, but clearly he's asking for it at the age of four. And we was lying in bed a few days ago and he said, Daddy, when I get older, I'm going to be an art man. I'm going to be an art man because I'm really good at art. And I said, do you mean an artist? And he said, yes, I'm going to be an artist. And I said, that's wonderful. I didn't say anything to deter him. But I remember in my mind starting to think about, oh, no, I don't want him to necessarily choose his career now. And I was kind of thinking to myself, what does he mean by artist? You know, like, you know, he's got so many other talents I want him to pursue. I'm really upset that popped into my mind. It was I identify it as a piece of bias. And I'm happy to say that I've reached out the following day to that organization, the Giggling Pig, and booked his birthday party there. And then I've also inquired about membership, because I'm planning to make sure that he gets exposure more to the painting, because he really enjoys to paint. And so I think as parents, we need to be cautious and mindful of our own personal bias as we kind of try and shape or nudge our children in maybe a career path that is either a career path we understand or a career path that we think is lucrative, when in fact their excellence might actually be shining and taking them in a very different path.
Matt, I love your vulnerability and I love you being open to share that, because I think that will actually resonate with a lot of our listeners who are parents. Before my children were born, I really thought of my children as blank canvases. And then I realized that they come out as their own medium and I just get to help them, you know, facilitate their growth in terms of whatever they want to develop. But it's very easy, I think, as parents to wish for certain things for our children, when instead we just need to look for that potential and that inspiration and that motivation, and then help them to continue to grow that. So kudos to you for recognizing that and moving forward it in a path that's going to help him.
So talking about season three, we've got some announcements to make.
So our first announcement is season three, we've already started recording, will launch on January 25th. So we're going to start to release our episodes on Tuesdays. So we hope you will bookmark that day for our opening launch on January 25th.
And we're also introducing something new for our podcast. So we've had some suggestions that, is there an opportunity for us to take some questions from our listeners? And, you know, for now, we're just going to start off with receiving those questions via email. But we figured we can cover some of these questions in these kind of bonus episodes, which we refer to as bridging the gap episodes, which is where we kind of reflect on past episodes. But we're also going to try and incorporate questions from our audience. And so if you have a question, you know, it could be a question from this season. It could be a question of an upcoming episode. We have a new email address for you, and that is questions@fuelingcreativitypodcast.com. So that's questions@fuelingcreativitypodcast.com. Don't worry, just put question for a show, write down your question, and we will identify those questions and bring them up in future shows.
We would also love to have your feedback on our first two seasons of the podcast. So stay tuned for the survey that will come out on our social media and fill that out to help us understand what you are enjoying and what you would like to see more of in the upcoming episodes of the podcast. So in closing, we would love to have your review on our podcast. So please go to your favorite podcast platform and give us a review. I'm Dr. Cindy Burnett.
And my name is Dr. Matthew Worwood.
This show was produced by Creativity and Education and in partnership with TeachersInnovationStudio.com.